Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. As Western leaders recklessly talk of escalating the conflict in Ukraine, European voters have sent the exact opposite message. Pro-war elites are clearly out of step with voters, and they've been punished for it. Crosstalking Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, Daniel McAdams in Lake Jackson. He is the executive director of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. In Washington, we have Richard Cook. He is a former U.S. federal policy analyst, as well as author of Our Country, Then and Now. And in Montreal, we cross to Matthew Ehret. He is a senior fellow at the American University in Moscow and director of the Rising Tide Foundation of Canada. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Daniel, let me go to you first. I woke up this morning finding out that you and I were on the same enemies list, okay? You and I seem to be highly profiled in these enemies lists. Again, another one of these lists that are funded by the U.S. government. Good money used in this fashion, taxpayer money. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm just obviously hanging out with the wrong crowd. You're a bad influence on me. I mean, I think this time they may have stepped on it a little bit because, there were 390-some prominent Americans, myself excluded, of course. But you're talking about Donald Trump, Elon Musk, Tucker Carlson. And the fact that this organization, Texty, is affiliated with the U.S. government through the U.S. State Department, with the project they did together, and through the USAID, which funded a project with them, it's going to, I think, make it a little bit embarrassing. As I mentioned on our program yesterday, if I was a member of Congress, I'd go down to the floor and say, I would like to know exactly what's going on with our foreign policy. Why are we subsidizing a country that is putting Americans on lists when they know that they've had other lists that they put people on that have been killed? So, I think someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene could do it. Matt Gaetz could do it. Any of these guys could go down there and make a real scandal out of this.
Yeah, but the very fact that it's happening is a scandal in itself. I mean, again, the U.S., NATO is supporting Ukraine because of its democracy and our shared values. I have no idea what these shared values are whatsoever. And it's just shameful on the part of the U.S. government, particularly the Biden administration. You know, Richard, I started out with my introduction about the European elections, and we don't have to delve deeply into them here. But, I mean, the message is quite obvious. It's something that I've been saying on this program, and Daniel has been saying on his program, that this is an elite project. The Ukraine project is an elite project. And if you give the voters the chance, every once in a while, they're going to tell you what they think about it. And so you have a leadership in Germany and in France where they were embarrassed in front of the public for their public stance on this issue here. I don't know if it'll have any impact, but every once in a while, it's a trial balloon to see what people actually think. Your thoughts?
Well, I think as we realize, and one of the major themes in my book, Our Country Then and Now, is that the Western world was taken over by the globalist party many decades ago. And the aim of the globalist party, as we saw by the program put together by the Council on Foreign Relations right before World War II, was that over the course of time, the United States, as the enforcer of global hegemony, would engineer a military domination of the entire globe. That project has been going on now for well over a half a century. And what we are seeing today is other parts of the world standing up to that and saying, no, we're not going to go along with it. But there's a tremendous upsurge of rethinking going on among the populations of the Western world, including in Europe. And I know I have my own family in Germany. I have German-American grandchildren. And the population of Europe is finally themselves rising up and saying, this is ridiculous. Why do we need what Pepe Escobar calls the hegemon controlling everything all the time? That's absurd.
Well, and I mean, Richard, and they're not even doing a very good job of it. I mean, you know, that's the problem here. You know, Matthew, what we've seen over the last few weeks is escalation. I'm calling this program the folly of escalation. And, you know, escalation only works or doesn't work to a certain point here, and we go into the realm of nuclear weapons and deterrence. And the problem I see here is that what got us through the Cold War was deterrence. Both sides agreed about the theory and practice of deterrence. Now we have one side, the West, that says, nah, we're not going to play the deterrence game. They're doing that at our great peril, everyone's peril. Matthew.
Yeah, it is really concerning, the new logic that entered the scene with these third generation technocrats that seem to have a real loss in mental aptitudes that was seen at the very least as vicious as people like Kissinger or Zbigniew Brzezinski were. They had a certain sense, at least, of their self-interest, and the idea of deterrence was a big factor of the mutual assured destruction, which I don't even think that the mutual assured destruction idea was necessary or good, but at the very least, sure, there was an idea that one side wasn't going to win nuclear war. Whereas now, with these younger generation technocrats that have been drinking their own Kool-Aid and operating on these game theory models that have been gamed out again and again for the past 25, 30 years, demonstrating that it's statistically possible, somehow, they're, according to these computers, to win, at least with minimal collateral damage with our, you know, Asian or European allies, collateral damage accepted, but it's still possible to win a thermonuclear war. And they're acting upon this insanity despite all of the evidence to the contrary and despite the hypersonic missiles, the Kinzhals, the other next generation weapons that demonstrate that these mathematical models are foolish, they don't work in reality, but they're still acting on it, and it is very concerning.
Yeah, but Matthew, what's even more concerning and doesn't get the coverage it deserves, obviously, in Western media, is that, and I think Daniel will agree with me here, is that over the last few weeks, even months right now, we could use the starting point of Tucker Carlson's interview with Vladimir Putin. That's a good benchmark. They're very aware how the U.S. And NATO is disregarding these concept of deterrence. I mean, even to the point of pleading, saying, would you sober up? Would you wake up? Let me throw that to Daniel. Daniel, what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, to me, it looks like escalation is the new Wunderwaffen, you know, the new wonder weapon, because everything they put out has failed, from the javelins to the unleash the leopards. Everything has failed. So the new wonder weapon. Now, Ukraine would have won if only we would have let them strike the Russians as they were amassing over the border. If only you had done that, then they would have won. So if we start doing that, then they'll win. It was the same thing with the money. Oh, if the Republicans would only stop dragging their feet and pass this money. Well, they did pass the money. It didn't change a thing. And now this is the next escalation, because in their minds, and this is how neocons operate, they don't have the same thought processes that we do, which is that Putin is bluffing. Russia is bluffing. They're afraid of us. We're number one. We're the indispensable nation. So no matter what we do, they won't retaliate. And it's a dangerous and deadly game that they're playing with our lives.
You know, Richard, I hear on various podcasts these days, the Russians don't bluff, they act. Well, yours truly said that about 2.5 years ago, and now it's gotten currency. I wish I would get the royalties for saying it, but I don't. But Richard, that is the point here. They're playing a game of bluff that they think that they can win, and no one will win this game of chicken.
Well, what we don't realize enough is that all this whole big bluff game is to cover up a total financial collapse of the Western world. The Western world has been sinking deeper and deeper into debt due to its usury-based financial system going back centuries. They've sucked up all of the money in the world that they can get their hands on, and now we're looking at catastrophic debt, particularly within the United States and the U.S. government, where the government debt is over 125% of the GDP, which is acknowledged as being catastrophic. And I have said that the U.S. government has been functionally bankrupt now for 15 years. The only reason they've escaped from it is a treasury bond bubble financed by purchase by the Federal Reserve of U.S. government debt, because everybody else, particularly China, is dumping their U.S. debt. So all of this looming in the background, roaring down the tracks like a runaway train, the system has to cover it up by all of this bluff and all of these foreign escapades that are a smokescreen for what is really happening.
Yeah, well, Matthew, we had Lindsey Graham, the most notorious of them all. He just said in the last news cycle what it's really all about in Ukraine. The Ukraine is a gold mine. I mean, another market to pillage. I mean, they really say the quiet part outside every once in a while. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, what was it? What did he say? $10 to $12 trillion dollars in minerals. Why let the Russians and the Chinese have it? He actually included both Russia and China in his narrative when we could have it. I mean, it's like this is inside voice stuff, and you're just coming out saying it. But then again, they're also saying they're going on a flight forward now as well. I mean, they're licking their chops to get the additional $300 billion to confiscate from Russian foreign assets. They're still going for that. There is, I think it's tied to what Richard was just saying, that there's this collapse function that is perceived on some level by these neocon freaks, and they're just grappling for straws for anything that will get them to be preserved from being sucked into this oncoming abyss of collapse. So they're in a desperate flight forward mode of what can I get? What can I steal to keep this boat afloat a little bit longer, but it's destined to collapse. It can't do anything but collapse. Unless you get your head out of your ass and you realize that we made systemic errors over decades and let's start making corrections. But if you don't do that,
what makes it worse, Matthew, is that everything that you just said, what Richard just said about the economy, and then tie in election cycles. Okay, so just keep it going until November. Unfortunately, the whole world doesn't revolve around American elections. Thankfully, finish up before we go to the break, Matthew.
No, I think, like I said, the window is closing very fast right now, and Russia has offered us, China has offered us all of these wonderful windows of opportunity to actually demonstrate what a real cooperative partnership can look like, how we can build infrastructure together, and we've chosen to look the other way over decades now and go for hegemony instead.
And that is a craven choice that we have discussed on this program for years. Gentlemen, we're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Daniel in Lake Jackson. Speaking of wonder weapons, the F-16s are on their way, we're told. Okay, we've been hearing that for a while here. But Ukraine says, you know, with its new wonder weapon, they're going to station some of their F-16s outside of Ukraine. Well, presumably that means maybe Poland, maybe Romania, maybe the Baltic states. This bodes very, very badly because from the Russian point of view, it doesn't really matter where these planes are stationed. If they're going to be designed to kill Russians or even intra-Russian airspace, they're targets. Of course, I'm getting at Article 5. Daniel.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take a military expert, and I'm far from one, to understand that the F-16s are not a game changer. They can, you know, Russia has air dominance. That's an absolute fact. You know, I mean, anyone with eyes can see this. And so they realize this is the case. They can't take off on Ukrainian runways because the Russians will bomb the runways, and the F-16s apparently are very quirky, and they have to have pristine runways to take off from, although otherwise a great plane. Nevertheless, so they're going to have to store them and hide them in Romania and Poland. Pretty dumb idea. And the last thing that I read is that the ones that are hidden over there will not be used in combat. They're just kind of spares in case or when the other ones are shot down, which will be the case. And Peter, if I could just add one very quick thing on the Lindsey Graham thing, which is very funny. I was just looking at a chart before the show, and Lindsey Graham's $12 trillion worth of minerals, over half of them are located in the four provinces that are already part of Russia. So good luck with that, Mr. Graham, Mrs. Graham.
Well, I mean, but Daniel, this is also all part of a paradigm that we've seen since the end of the Cold War. The end of the Soviet Union, now it's the end of Russia. This has been their mindset all along. Let me throw it to Richard here. I mean, if you look at how Joe Biden soiled the Normandy commemorations, apparently he soiled it in more than one way. I'll let our viewers decide on that. But you mean, you know, when he's cheering on the death of Russian soldiers at an event where the United States and the Soviet Union were allies, in an event where the Allies could have only invaded Normandy because of the Soviet advances on the Eastern Front. I mean, from the Russian side, you know, it was like the Napoleon, the Germans, the Nazis, and now we have NATO. It's all part of the same seamless view of history. Richard.
Well, the Western way of making war, and I point particularly to the British and to the Americans, is to so provoke the other side that the other side will react in such a way that we can then point the finger at them and blame them for starting the war. This is the way the Spanish-American War began, with That's Remember right. the Maine. It's the way the United States Army wiped out the Native Americans. They would pressure the Native Americans, killing off the buffalo, that when the Native Americans reacted, they would go in and they would decimate and destroy the villages. It was the way the United States provoked the Japanese into attacking before World War II. And it's quite obvious that what we're trying to do, and commentators say this over and over again, is to so pressure Russia, so pressure China, that they will react in such a way that we can then say, oh, they started the war. We have clean hands. So we're going to go after them because they're to blame, not us.
Yes, I agree with you absolutely. But Matthew, we have something called nuclear weapons this time around. And I'd like to point out to everyone, when you look at great power politics, great powers try to avoid direct confrontation with other great powers. You know why? Because you might lose. That's why you fight proxy wars. The Biden administration can't seem to get through through its thick skull. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, well, there's a lack of wisdom on a lot of levels, right? In terms of what Richard was just saying, I think that's actually really interesting that there is an inability to take the lessons, basic elementary lessons from history, and apply them. I mean, D-Day just happened, the opening up the second front, after postponing it for a year and a half. Okay. But it finally happened. It happened largely because of the sacrifices. The Russians they carried out the Battle of Kursk, Stalingrad, the amount of sacrifice of Russia, the Russians and the Chinese carrying the weight of World War II mostly on their shoulders, with 90% of the Wehrmacht being absorbed by the Russian military and the Russian people. All of that was ignored until we entered in mid-1944 on the second front, at least, in Europe. I mean, all of that was ignored, and all of these D-Day commemorations by Biden, by these European technocrats, they just completely ignored the Russian sacrifice because it's not convenient to be reminded of that when the current agenda is to replay World War II, but on the other side, where we're all of a sudden taking the Azovs off of the terrorist list.
You read my mind. That's exactly where I want to go. Daniel, you know, now American arms can be used by the Azov battalion. 10 years ago, that was considered illegal by the U.S. Congress. Now they've conveniently given neo-fascists the green light to use our weapons, okay? This is extraordinary. What kind of coverage does it get? Oh, that doesn't. They were feted on the campus of Stanford not too long ago. Is this really about values? Or if it's about values, they're the wrong values. Daniel.
Well, one of the reasons you and I and so many others made that list, Peter, is because according to the organization, people who suggest that there's a Nazi problem in Ukraine are pushing Russian propaganda. Well, again, all you have to do is have eyes to see, and you can see these are not the nicest guys on the block. And so the idea that they can use the weapons is another reflection of the desperation. I mean, I don't know if you gentlemen saw it, but yesterday, I think it was, the Andalou press agency published some photographs of Ukrainian military men. And I mean, I'm not a young guy anymore, but these guys looked like, you know, my dad's age. I mean, pretty, pretty bad, pretty, pretty old. Desperation, there's no men left to fight, and that's a problem. And again, we're headed by people like the Biden administration, where Biden is just simply not a player in this game. So that falls to the second tier, people like Jake Sullivan. And if you look over Jake's career, and we don't have time to go into it now, but this guy has a string of failures, you know, going back to Libya. I mean, this guy has no achievements whatsoever. And the same is true of Tony Blinken. I think Richard started out, these are men without achievement in their lives, without anything other than this idea of power politics and establishing the narrative. They're narrative establishers. That's all
right.
They can do.
Yeah, but Daniel, if I can throw it to Richard, they're not good at any of these things. Even in establishing the narrative, they can't keep it straight. I mean, this is what they don't deal with the real world. They deal with the world what they want it to be, and this is the big disconnect, because the Russians are primarily concerned with their security. I'm not really sure what the West is concerned about beyond hegemony, which isn't working out for them anyway. Richard.
Well, we need to look at who is bossing these people around, where their orders are coming from. Their orders are coming from, to use a phrase, big global banking and finance. These are the ones who run the hegemon. These are the ones who give the orders to the neocons. These are the ones who give the orders to the U.S. military. Now, I'm sure Daniel has noticed with great interest that Representative Thomas Massey has introduced a bill in Congress very reminiscent of Ron Paul, which is to abolish the Federal Reserve. That goes to the heart of the matter. Now, he doesn't propose in that bill what we're going to put in its place, but what we have to put in its place is an indigenous monetary system that, A, recognizes that the banking system has run the United States and the rest of the Western world into functional bankruptcy, and B, we need a new monetary system based upon building a functioning society for all of our citizens. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting, Matthew, is that we got a kind of a sneak preview in St. Petersburg at the conference there last week. But we're going to get it in October, I think, when the BRICS has their annual meeting. It's going to be in Kazan, Russia. And I think they're going to roll out their own Swiss system, all about the monetary system that Richard was talking about. Except for this one, we'll work without the dollar. Matthew.
Yeah, Putin has made that clear that that's the intention. I know that you had the Iranian foreign minister, finance minister last month also saying that this was in the works. Russia has already... I think now the last statistic I read was that 86% of transactions take place in local currencies versus 23% last year, same time in the Russian central bank, at least. So you definitely have a convergence, I think, by this growing multipolar alliance, the BRICS, which is now seeing, I think there was like, we have the Turkish foreign minister calling to join the BRICS. There's a huge waiting list now of other nations wanting to get on board. This viable thing that can float, where the current system of the EU, the US dollar, is obviously tanking. People want off the ship. And I think it's only a matter of time. And as you said, the next BRICS summit might very well be a place where we see a watershed breakthrough on the alternative to SWIFT as a fully integrated payment system. And God knows what beautiful things might come out of that.
You know, and Daniel, you know, what the new elections that are being called in France, and we could possibly see it in Germany. What they're doing is they're all calling for a war economy. They're preparing for a war that they can easily avoid. Explain that.
I mean, it's like me preparing for a marathon. Yeah, I can prepare, but it's not going to happen, right? I mean, war economy, what economy? You don't have an economy. You had your pipelines blown up by the Americans. What are you talking about? You know, it's a complete joke. And I think that's why the European public, I mean, this is a referendum on how they feel their leaders are doing. And guess what? They're not very happy. And you see the AfD dominated the entire eastern part of Germany. I mean, this is a massive protest vote. So my guess is...
Well, but Daniel, in light of what you just said, considering the demonization that party experienced for months before the election, and they still did well. I'm sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, they were one step away from being outlawed, and they may still try to do that. My guess is what's going to happen next are the spooks are going to get busy. They're going to infiltrate these parties. They're going to have rogue party members saying crazy things so that they can demonize the parties. They're going to do whatever they can, because I think they're in full panic now with these elections. In France as well, I mean, we're looking at Le Pen. I mean, possibly, I mean, if Macron loses the snap elections he called, maybe he'll quit. And if that's the case, I mean, there could be a real tidal wave there. And so the next step is for the spooks to get in and undermine the whole thing.
Yeah, it's all about democracy versus autocracy. But what I see going on in the West is the most fundamental anti-democratic impulses here. We're seeing what the Washington Post is doing to the gray zone, and I think that is a trial balloon, unfortunately, how they're going to go after other people, like on this program, who are dissenting, okay? That's the next major block we have to deal with. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Montreal, Washington, and in Lake Jackson. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.